Yeah, I would say that you see it in, I would say in the best guys, you always see that there's a big adventure behind them. They have overcome some very big difficulties to get what they are. And that's kind of what made them so so tough, I would say. Because if you've lived an easy life, then maybe you're not really gonna have the stomach to go through the big obstacle that is becoming the best in the world.
That's Vasco Velassa, who was the WTS silver medalist in 2020. And this is the Oxygenatic Triathlon Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Oxygenatic Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com, electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. Right, everyone, welcome to the show. I hope you're all well. I hope you are thriving as lockdown hopefully draws to a close. I've got a cracking interview for you this week. We've got young Vasco Velassa from Portugal on the show. A lot of you will know him as the silver medalist from WTS Hamburg last year. He burst onto the scene with an incredible run. He was also second in the Super League Tri Arena Games in Rotterdam last year. And we've got Super League Tri Arena Games London coming up this week. So I thought, what a better person to get on to both talk about the SLT Arena Games and to hear his story. I mean, honestly, this kid's got such a great story of really laying it on the line, moving countries, moving away from home at the age of 15 to pursue his dreams. You're going to love it, I think. So more from Vasco later on today. All right, so a couple of bits and bobs for you then before we kick off this week's interview. Two things to talk about. The first is, you may remember, if you're a long-time listener, back in episode 268, this would have been going back to January of last year, we had Tom Crossland on the show talking about the run to refuge. He was looking to run 3,000 kilometres back from Greece to London to highlight the plight of human trafficking and people who are human trafficked. Really interesting interview with Tom. He's an athlete I've coached for the past 5 or 6 years. And obviously, shortly after we recorded and put the interview out, it became obvious with the pandemic that he wasn't going to be able to go and complete Run to Refuge. So he's put it back to this year. And instead of going abroad with all the confusion over the travel restrictions and stuff, Tom is going to do it in this country. So starting on the 1st of June, Tom is going to run round England and Wales. He's going to start in London, run to the East Coast, go all the way up to Newcastle, across Adrian's Wall, back down the coast around England, back down the coast around North Wales, South Wales, down through across Cornwall and along the South Coast on a 3-month trip. It's going to be 3,000 kilometres. It's going to be running somewhere in the region of 30 miles a day. So Tom's been building up to this for, you know, 5 or 6 years. He's a superb guy. And there's tons of stuff going to be coming online with Tom's Run to Refuge. Tribe are on board. Some of you will remember they were a long-time sponsor of the show. Precision Hydration are on board sponsoring as well. But they're going to try and turn this into an enormous virtual running event where giving people the opportunity to do some or all of this event, either as a team, individually, alongside Tom on a day-by-day basis. And there's even going to be the opportunity to meet up with Tom and go for a run around some of the places if you are local to where he's going to be running around. So here's what I need you to do, Oxygenatic community. Go check out his website, which is runtorefuge.com. He's got an interactive map on there of where he's going, where he's going to be planning to start and finish each leg. Like I said, each leg's going to be about 30 miles, and he's going to be running Friday, Saturday, Sunday each week, Monday off, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday off, and then 3 days again. So 3 days on, one off, 2 days on, one off. If you are interested in helping raise money, running alongside Tom, go and check it out. Start thinking now. You've got about 2 months in your head to sort of plan out whether you'd like to go and build yourself up, get fit, and go and run 30 miles in a day with Tom. Also, if you heard his story and you liked it, if you think you might have an opportunity to help Tom out along the way, and I don't know what that might be, it might be in terms of clothing, equipment, sponsorship, even if it might be saying, hey, we live near the coast, you're welcome to come and pitch your tent in my garden, or even put him up for the night. if you've got that opportunity, I think he'd really appreciate it. Tom's going to be doing this whole thing self-supported. I think he's maybe going to be having his father drive a car to different places for him as well on the way. But I'm still doing the thinking process as this as we're going along, but I'm really excited for it. It's been a massive 3-year project, this, and to see it finally get off the ground, I'd love to help Tom out in whatever way I can. And if that's publicizing this over the podcast and hoping it captures people's imagination, then fantastic. I think Tom and Tribe have worked together to put together a fundraising pack for schools. So schools in the communities he's running through are going to be doing sponsored runs and seeing if the whole school can run 3,000 kilometers in, you know, over a period of a few weeks or even in one day to match what Tom's doing to really highlight the issue of human trafficking, which is something that the Tribe Freedom Foundation has been raising money for years and years and years. So if you're interested, the website there is runtorefuge.com. Like I said, it's not a commercial thing. There's no money and sponsorship involved in this at all. I just think Tom's a really genuinely one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Hard as nails, but the kindest soul you'll ever meet as well. So if you're interested in getting involved, even if you think, do you know what, I've always fancied running across Adrian's Wall or, you know, something like that, maybe now's the time to start planning to go and have an epic day out. I'm going to go and join him for a couple of the days along the way, I think. I'm going to do maybe one of the legs over when he's on near where my parents live. I'm hopefully going to go and do a bit of running with him around North Wales. So yeah, if you fancy it, guys, have a little think. Go and check his website out. Maybe start planning to give yourself a long, steady paced walk run with Tom and maybe me and maybe more of the community as well. So yeah, go and have a look and check that out. All right, moving on to more triathlon news now then. SLT Arena Games, Super League Tri Arena Games, are taking place in London this coming weekend. So if you're not aware of this before, they've had one in Rotterdam. It's powered by Zwift. So we're going to have swimming in the pool in the London Olympic Centre. And then they've got turbo trainers set up with the bike rides on Zwift and then treadmills set up next to them with the runs on Zwift as well. It is going to be, let's get this right, is it 10? Yeah, 10 males and 10 females racing. And they're going to do super short back-to-back repeated races. Each of the races will be over in total in 1 hour for the men and 1 hour for the women. I think they've got 200 meter swim. It's maybe a 5K bike and a 1K run, I think, repeated over different orders and, you know, different starts and things like that. Fast, furious racing. There's 2 or 3 separate races within each race. They have a really short turnaround time. It's brutal. It'll be great for you to watch if you want something to do, if you're on the turbo this weekend and you're at a loose end. It's going to be on between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock UK time. It's going to be on the BBC. You can watch it on the red button there. It's also available to watch all around the world in different countries as well. You can check that out on the Super League Tri website, and it's being streamed live on their website as well. So tons of stuff to go and watch. Now check these out for a lineup. Headlining the latest race, we've got Georgia Taylor-Brown, GTB. We've got Sophie Caldwell. We've got young Kate Waugh. We've got Beth Potter. We've also got, from the world of long course racing, we've got Ruth Astle, and we've also got Lucy Charles Barkley. So Lucy's obviously hot on the heels of her amazing race that she just had over in Challenge Miami. And obviously she's got the pedigree as a swimmer from early days. She's really looking forward to seeing how she can mix it up. And I've read, I don't know how much truth there is in this, but I've read rumors that she would really like to have a pop at the Olympics one day. So this is maybe her attempt to put a foot in the water and see how she mixes it up over short course. So we've also got internationals racing. We've got Rachel Klamer. We've got Alice Beto from Italy. We've got Ilaria Zane from Italy and Anna Godoy from Spain. Over on the men's side, we've got Johnny Brownlee. I would say Johnny Brownlee's probably our headline name there. We've also got youngsters Alex Yee, Ben Dijkstra racing. So we've got, you know, arguably 3 of our top Olympic distance races there. We've also got George Goodwin and Tim Don racing from the world of longer course racing. So George hot on the heels of his amazing race that he had out in Daytona. Tim is obviously, you know, legend, former Ironman world record holder, 3-time Olympian, 2-time world champion over both Olympic distance and duathlon. So great to see him getting involved as well. Rather sad to see that the hair's been cut and the beard's gone, though. I'm a bit disappointed about that. We've also got racing. Rhys Charles Barkley, he's going to be mixing it up as well. He had a cracking career as a short-distance swimmer, so he'll really be hammering it to the boys on the swim. We've got the Germans, Justus Nierslag, who won over at SLT Rotterdam. We've got Jonas Schomburg, who ran him really, really close at Rotterdam, if you remember. It was really, you know, going neck and neck in the final sprint on the bike for those two. And Jonas has got an amazing story of turning up at one of the Super League races with his dad and basically badgering Macca to let him into the race. And Macca said, look, you have to go away and qualify at one of the smaller qualifying races, which he did, and has won his way into a place in Super League, which is brilliant. We've also got Martin Van Riel, and we've also got today's special guest, Vasco Velasa from Portugal, who was the silver medal winner at Rotterdam, silver medal winner at Hamburg WTS last year, and was second at Rotterdam SLT last year as well. So some cracking names racing there. Like I said, it is a really good way to spend 2 hours if you're planning on doing a ride and the weather's not great. 2 hours will absolutely fly by if you're either on the treadmill or if you're on the turbo trainer. So yeah, get on it, get watching. 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock UK time this weekend. And if you're doing a big long session indoors on the treadmill or on the turbo trainer, you're going to need to take care of your hydration. You're going to get hot and sweaty, and that's more than just drinking water. You need to get those electrolytes replaced as well. And if you're a very heavy sweater or you're a very salty sweater like I am, then you're going to need to replace those with more than just the standard electrolytes that you'll get in any other normal sports drink. So check out our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENETIC15. And the thing that makes them so great is their electrolytes come in different strengths. So I lose about 1600 milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat. I use their 1500 mil sachets, put it in a 750 mil bottle, and I know that I'm getting all the sodium replaced, and it's really solved the problems that I had with cramping on the bike indoors, and keeps me nice and hydrated as well. I don't have that raging thirst 2 hours after I get off the turbo. So yeah, go over there and check them out. They've even got an online sweat test you can take that'll give you a really good lead as to whether you're a very heavy or a very salty sweater. All right, with that, let's go over. I've got a cracking long interview this week with silver medalist from the WTS, Portugal's Vasco Velasa. So, Vasco, welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you on, man. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for the invitation. Really nice to be here and to meet you.
Yeah, well, it's our chance to get a future Olympic champion on the show, man. So they don't come along too often. I'm getting in early. This is my chance to get in early before everyone in the world knows who you are, buddy.
Hopefully. I hope that plan works out for you, because that's good for me as well.
So where are you joining us from today? Are you up in Sweden still at the moment?
Yeah, still in Sweden, in Linköping. A city. I'm here studying at the university in Sweden, and I've been here for, well, it's been quite some years now here in Sweden.
Awesome. And we'll give people the greatest hits, and you've broken out in a big way over this last year. You had fantastic results at the Super League Arena Games, and then you had absolute breakout results in Hamburg, taking the silver medal there at the WTS World Championships. So, you know, you kind of burst on the scene, and I've previously seen you racing out in Malta at Super League in 2019. Which again, I think was a big break for you to get a wild card out for that. But let's come to that later and go all the way back. How did you end up in triathlon in the first place? You were originally from Portugal and moved to Sweden when you were what, 12, 13, something like that?
Yeah, that's right. So I started very, very young in triathlon, by the influence of Vanessa Fernandes.
Portuguese, oh yeah. Athlete. Yeah.
You maybe know. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
She was a very, very big star 10 years ago. Just won everything that she could win. And well, she had a very big influence in triathlon in Portugal. And well, the radio, the TVs were always talking about her.
Okay.
I think at 3-4 years old, I was doing some gymnastics and then just playing around and biking and running, like, I don't know, like all the kids did back then, at least. And then my parents kind of wanted me to learn how to swim. you put the three together, so running, biking, swimming together, and with the influence of Vanessa, we just, okay, triathlon is a good way to put it all together. And I just, yeah, just started out, and it was more of a playing and making friends in the beginning. It's not really triathlon, so a running session could be more like some kind of football training.
Yeah.
Playing around. But you make friends, and I made some really, really good friends from the beginning. We got really close, and from there on, I wanted to go to practice because I knew my best friends were there. So I just to be able to be with them and play with them, I had to go to practice, and it just became my daily routine. To every day after school, going to practice, and well, from 6 years old until I was 12, 13, that was my daily routine in Portugal, just going to school and going to training every day.
Now, from having done a little bit of reading about it, it sounds like you guys had that was what you did, you know, kids in the UK go and kick football around. It sounds like you guys had this, you know, what you did was you swam or you ran or you biked. Was there a big triathlon scene for 6, 7, 8 year olds there at the time? And was that influenced by Vanessa Fernandez, do you think?
Well, she was for sure a very big key for, so she was the reason why there were so many young athletes. So
yeah,
that's why I could make so many friends, because there were so many kids doing triathlon, or at least so many kids beginning and starting, trying it out. And it comes from, for sure, from Vanessa Fernandes' influence in sports culture in Portugal. And well, it kind of became a trend, and you wanted your kids to be doing triathlon. Well, it just, and as you say, like many people go to football, that's what kids do usually. You just go play and you play football, and it kind of just became triathlon instead. Not, of course, football is still the biggest sport in Portugal, but with Vanessa's influence back then, triathlon got quite big, I'd say. And yeah, I would say she's a key for me to be in triathlon, and for all the good Portuguese guys today come from that era.
Is it something that you took very seriously? Were you a sort of very serious driven kid, or were you, it sounds like the opposite. It sounds like you really enjoyed it and it was just fun, and the kind of the racing results almost came as a byproduct of the fun you were having.
For sure. So I'm the youngest child of my family. I have an older sister, so has the youngest in the family. I kind of got taken care of by my mom and by my sister, so I was very unorganized. I was used to, everyone was just taking care of me. I had no idea what life was about. I was just there to play. I was just there to have fun. My first year in triathlon, I was very bad. I actually remember the first time that they took me to a triathlon club, I was crying because, no, I don't want to. I want to play football. But then 1 week later, I was biking around with my dad, and I met the triathlon club, and I was, no, now I want to go with them. Now I want to go with them. So I just went with the flow, just doing what I wanted to do. And as I said before, I went there for the friends. For me, a very big deal when you're a child, you cannot be there training. You got to be there to play. That's what it became, every day, just playing with the friends. And it slowly progressed to something a little bit more. So in the beginning, it was only playing. Then you get, well, then you, after a while, after 1, 2 years, I started, even in Portugal, we have very, even in the young ages, we have like the Portuguese championship for the 5 to 6 years old, and 6 to 7, and 7 to 8. So you have something to fight for.
Yeah.
So in the first year, I was very much behind, and the second maybe as well. But from there on, I think I had one race where I won. And from there on, I was like, now it's fun to have friends, but it's also fun to win. So I'm gonna make it a little bit more serious now. So I think it's from when I was 7 years and older, and yeah. And from there on, I love to win, and I love to be there with the friends. So I slowly the training started to be more serious, and I kind of accepted that when we are training, it's got to be a serious thing. But then at the same time, I was able to be there, to be with the friends. So I do the job as I have to do it, but then we could be playing in the, what is it called, in the locker rooms for 1 hour after the session until my mom comes in and starts yelling at me. You got to get home.
And how old were you when your family moved from Portugal up to Sweden then?
So I started when I was 6 years old, and then I was doing triathlon all the way until I was 12, 13. That's when you're a youth.
Yeah.
So that's when you can start qualifying for the youth European championships and stuff like that. And I think I went to my first one when I was still living in Portugal. And then at 13, in August, when I was in the summer, when I was 13 years old, we moved to Sweden. Not my choice. I was quite young due to the economical crisis at the moment. That, well, there was a little bit all over the world, but in Portugal we kind of suffered a lot with it. My parents, not directly about the money, but about creating a better career for them and for me and my sister. So trying to give us a chance to get out of the Portuguese bubble. So Portugal is quite a small country to see the world and to understand, get a bigger picture of what life is about. That's what they told us back then, and I did not understand, and now I understand much better. So I'm quite thankful for that now, actually. So it was a very, very big adventure. So at 13, I could barely speak English, and I had English and Swedish to learn when I got here. But I would say I just somehow, I like to make everything some kind of a play. So I like to make it fun in some ways. So instead of seeing the negative side, somehow I always had the ability to see things on the positive side, and I was just looking forward. Okay, let's make new friends. What a big possibility to make hundreds of new friends in the whole different country. And then, I just got to Sweden, and I was going to an English school first. It was far away from home, so I was taking the train like for half an hour, 45 minutes to some other city, because there was no place in the school where I was living, and I was getting lost in the city because I didn't know where the school was, and I was, as I said, very unorganized and very, I was not used to taking care of myself, as I said from the beginning. So it was a very, very big adventure, and I don't know, but anyhow, I just speaking bad English, I got to classes and I liked it anyways. I liked the adventure anyways. I liked the finding my way to where I want to go. So okay, I got lost, I was 1 hour late for school, but okay, I told the teachers what happened and they understood, and then I could take the classes anyways, and I could make the new friends around, and then next time I knew the city a little bit better because I had taken some unknown roads, and then maybe the next time I got lost and I took another road, and after 1 month I knew all the roads around there. I had to talk with people around the streets to get help and everything. And it's an adventure, and enjoying every step of it was a big key to getting to work here in Sweden. But the adventure actually continues for quite many years, because I was losing some hours of school because I was getting lost, as I said. So I actually, after 1 or 2 months, or okay, let's say 3 months, I found a school. I finally got accepted to a school where I was living. But that was a Swedish school. So then I was just learning Swedish from scratch. So I was just going to a school where I had no idea what language was, and just, yeah, word for word and pointing at objects and everything, just slowly learning.
I've got so much respect for someone who does something like that. I used to be a school teacher sort of 5, 6, 7 years ago, and we had some family who moved from Slovakia and spoke no English. And I remember really clearly this lad sitting at the front of the class, and he had an English dictionary, and he would try and find a word and look it up and work out what. And I just thought, is 1,000 times more intelligent than I am, and I'm meant to be teaching the class. How long did it take you before you started picking up Swedish and understanding what was going on? That must have been really challenging.
Yeah, it was challenging, but I was lucky because at the same time Sweden was taking in many refugees from Africa and some Arabic countries. So I had some people going through the same thing I was going through.
Okay.
So in that way, you can make your friends that are going through the same adventure that you are in that moment. I would say it took me 1 year. 1 year of, learning mostly just Swedish to then just getting to what I would say is the normal Swedish school. So getting to the normal system completely, just Swedish school. So it took me 1 year to get integrated in a Swedish school.
Wow. And so tell us about the triathlon aspect, how that's going to fit in them. Because I'd imagine coming from a Portuguese winter, which, you know, we fantasize about leaving England to go to Portugal for a week in the winter to actually ride out of the rain, to a Swedish winter. How did that affect how did it affect you in terms of the weather, but also how did it affect you in terms of finding people to train with? Because it sounds like it was part of your identity being a triathlete at 13 years old already, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I started triathlon so young that I didn't know anything else but to go to school and to the triathlon. That was my life. I had no idea what I would do if I didn't have triathlon. So from the moment we moved to Sweden, my mom helped us get in contact with whoever did some triathlon or had anything to do with triathlon here. And we were very, very welcomed. I was very thankful for Per Wikner, which was the first person who actually got in contact with us and answered and helped us get in contact with a swimming club, with a running club, and with a bike club. There was no triathlon club at the moment, but he helped us from barely knowing us to just giving us everything that we needed. And he actually started the triathlon club from there on. So slowly we put together two or three more kids and we were doing our own triathlon sessions on the weekends.
Nice.
So, a big adventure there as well, but I would say triathlon was a very big part of me. I could not just leave it.
Yeah.
So me and my sister, we were both doing triathlon and we helped each other. So I would say if I was alone, that would have been pretty hard because, as I said, friends are, having a companion doing whatever you do is quite important to have fun and to enjoy what you're doing. And if you have a swimming club, a biking club, and a running club, you never really integrate in any of them because you're always changing and you're not really, you're never doing the same thing as those kids are. And there's always going to be a little bit of a collision there.
Yeah.
So having my sister by my side going through exactly the same thing I am. So getting out of the water, maybe in a half hour earlier to get in time to the running club, to go there and do the running session and so on. So having my sister by my side was really, really helpful, and we've always helped each other a lot. For 2 years, I think it was just the two of us training together in Sweden.
Wow. Now I read that it was 13 when you went to Sweden, and at 15 you left home and moved to a different city. You moved to Motala. Is that how it's pronounced?
Motala.
And so you made the decision to leave home and go specifically to pursue triathlon. Tell us about that, because that's an incredibly brave thing to do as a 15-year-old, isn't it?
Yeah. So has all of this adventure was not enough at 15. So I moved there when I was 13. I was, as I said, I was for 2 years, it was just me and my sister training together. I decided, and when I finished the ninth grade and I was going to start high school, I got the chance to go to what they call the Swedish triathlon high school. So it's a high school where there is a triathlon coach the triathlon coach has a teacher at the school, but his job is to put together the best triathlon team with young athletes. So the best triathlon team with athletes that are going on high schools. And I got the chance to go there. I got the chance to start it. But that was 200, 300 Ks away from home. So I had to move there.
Wow.
So at 15, I just moved into a new home with a, it was me and one other guy that was going through the same thing, one other Swedish guy that moved there the same year. We moved in together to the same house. We did not know each other at all. I think we met once before. And well, now I had to do my own cooking. I had to do my own laundry. I had to do my own homework, and I had to take myself to practice. And well, from all of these adventures, I'll say that was the biggest one of them all. Just because, as I said from the beginning, I was someone not spoiled in the way of a rich life, but spoiled in having someone looking after me quite often.
Yeah.
But from the moment I moved away from home, now I have no safety net looking after me. I gotta do what I want to do, otherwise I'm just gonna fail.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have to move back home, and I would say that would be a fail. That would be a mission
unaccomplished. Is that the word?
Unaccomplished. Yeah, unaccomplished. Yeah.
Do you know, this reminds me so much. I think people assume that pro triathletes live a very wealthy, blessed, looked after life. And I've told you before, I've interviewed Chris McCormack and I've interviewed Crowe, and they talk about sleeping in their bike bags in the airport before races, you know, traveling around to places and not even having anywhere to stay the night before a race, sleeping in the airport to go and get these things done. And it reminds me so much of that, this idea of you have to make this commitment really quite young and go and really go both feet into it.
Yeah, I would say that you see it in the best guys, you always see that there's a big adventure behind them. They have overcome some very big difficulties to get what they are, and that's kind of what made them so so tough, I would say. Because if you've lived an easy life, then maybe you're not really gonna have the stomach to go through the big obstacle that is becoming the best in the world. Having a tough adventure, a very big obstacles behind you that you had to overcome. You get so tough from it. You really learn that you gotta choose what your goal is, and you gotta go after it, and nothing can stop you. And you working hard, it's mostly just learning that working hard pays off, but working hard is very hard. It's not just one day. It's not one day of this was hard. It's day after day. It can be 1 month, 1 year of living a quite difficult, quite hard life. But in the end, just knowing that this is what I want, and if I work hard, this is going to pay off. And that's what you learn from situations like this.
You know, your story reminds me a lot of, I was listening the other day to Greg Bennett's podcast interviewing Simon Whitfield, the 2000 Sydney Olympic champion. And he did a really similar thing to you. He moved across, his family had moved from Canada to Australia, and he moved across to Sydney on his own at 15 and went to school because it was where the best triathlon coaches were. And he happened to meet Greg Bennett at an event, and Greg Bennett used to pick him up at 4:30 in the morning in the little car to go to swim. If you've not heard it, you should check out the podcast, because the similarities between the sort of Simon Whitfield saying, I knew at 15 this is what I wanted to do, and I had to commit fully to going to do it. Now, he got to be Olympic champion after committing and giving up that. So maybe there's another parallel there, Vasco.
that would be nice. I really hope so. That's what we were looking for. That's what's in our mind. Of course, it's not given that you're going to make it, but that's what drives us outside. We really believe it. We really believe it. But I surely know who Whitfield is, and I haven't heard that, but I would say that's exactly the same. So I had to make the choice to either have an easy life back home or to move away and go after what I want and move away and to, well, go and meet the best athletes, in this case in Sweden.
Yeah.
Whitfield went to meet them in, well, did you say it was Sydney?
I think it was around the Sydney area in Australia, yeah.
And well, I'd say that's kind of exactly the same story. You just go after what you really want, and it's hard in the beginning, but those things only make you tougher. And at a young age, doing it at 15, I would say that's perfect, because at 15, it's not very important to be training very well, but it is when you start getting into 17, 18. At that age, you're really making or building the, well, building the grounds, being the base training for your whole elite career. And if you're going to, go through something like this when you're 20, then you're going to be losing a lot of training when you're 20. And when you're 20, it's a very important moment to be building, to build up your training, to be in very good shape and really only focusing on your training. So to go through something like this when you're young is really good, because it gives you the, it gives you time to just keep training on the years after that, instead of, yeah, going, well, instead of taking it a little bit easy and doing it later.
So you had some, yeah, some great successes along the way in the European Junior Championships, the World Junior Championships. There was golds and silvers there. The big break on the world scene seemed to have been, certainly from a world perception press point of view, when you got the wild card entry into Super League Malta in 2019. How did that come about?
Okay, so going from... After being in in Multala, so the city I moved to when I was 15, after 1 year there, I became the youth European champion. So it was my first big breakthrough as a young athlete, when I understood, okay, of course I'm not an elite, but in my age, with the people in my age, I'm top level. So I just gotta keep working to keep this level. And then 1 year after, 2017, I became the, as you said, the junior European champion, the world junior vice champion. So, well, that gets a much bigger, because, you know, okay, the juniors now are going to be the elites in a few years. So I just, again, I got to keep up with this. I'm in the right spot. I got to keep up with this. But then 2018, that's when I started to jump up and try to start stepping into the elite level, but it did not go as I expected. Very, very hard. From 2018 to August of 2019, I had very, very, not very, very bad, but bad races to what my standard is, to what I was used to and what I wanted to do. So I was used to be fighting for a podium. Now I was fighting to get on the top 30. And well, I would say that was a very tough year for me. I had some injuries, so I started training too much because I wanted more, but that's not really how it works. So I got my first big injuries, and then the injuries made me even worse. So I was having even worse results, and getting ahead around, I worked so hard, but it doesn't work. Should I keep going? What's the next step? I would say that moment, the moment going from junior to elite, that's a very tough one. It can take, as it took me 1.5 years, it can take longer. Many people can take 3-4 years maybe. And getting your head around, okay, it's worth it, it's going to pay off. It's quite hard when it's going very badly. So we all, even though we're working towards the future, we usually just look on what's going on now, what's the situation now, and going through race after race and getting, well, being just 30th, 25th in the races, it doesn't really show that it's worth to keep going. So those were really hard moments until I was invited to go to Super League. So I'd say in the end of 2019, things started to work out a little bit better. I took down my training and was like, okay, I've been very good. Things cannot disappear over day. So let's see what I've done wrong. Let's try and remedy it and let's try and make it better. So 2019, I started trying to build up a better base training towards the whole season, the preseason, and summer was still quite inconsistent, but towards the end, so when I got to the under 23 world championships, I got the fourth place there. So I was once again fighting for a medal, even though I just got outside, I was just outside of medal, because I was much closer. So that of course made me quite happy. And then at the same time, I'm not really sure it was before or after, I got my first elite medal. So it was a European Cup here in Sweden, where I was second. So once again, okay, I'm back at it. Of course, it's not the World Cup, but it's elite level. I'm back on the podiums, and then I just got invited to go, got a wild card for Super League, which was for me, I mean, it blew my mind. I was not expecting it. I was very, very happy to get the chance to, mostly that the to see that Super League chooses the best athletes to race, and if they saw me as one of those athletes, if they want to give me the chance, it means that, okay, if they see it, it means that the talent is there. So even before the races, that was a very big mental boost to knowing that there's a future here. And then, well, I did first jersey, where I did not even qualify to the final. And I remember just talking to Maka afterwards and telling him that I was just so grateful for the chance to be here. And that I think I even said to him that I know I can do better. And if you give me the chance to be in Malta, I'll prove to you that I can do better. And then in Malta, I did an amazing semifinal. And then I had the best time on the bike time trial and finished on the top 10 in the final, which was for me a very, very big breakthrough, which the most important part, it got me the confidence to, okay, let's go. This is the highest level.
Yeah.
And I would say Super League, that's the best part about Super League. It's the confidence that it can give you towards the season, towards other races.
It was a very interesting thing. I was watching back earlier the Super League Grand Final, and because you won the time trial, you got to go off first in the swim in the Eliminator Final. So again, you're front and center. You're the first person off on the blocks. I remember standing there and watching it. I mean, it was a fantastic spectacle. And you know, there's an element of Super League that's almost I don't know. I want to compare it to like Formula One car racing or something. There's an element of spectacle to it as well as there being an element of racing to it. And it seemed that all of you athletes were all in kind of like a big club together. It was like a summer camp for the best triathletes in the world. And you were all obviously racing each other hard, but there was an element of, you know, the younger, newer athletes getting to hang out and mix with, you know, Vincent Louis and the biggest names on the world circuit. Do you think that being in that environment was helpful to you as well, being around all of those athletes and hanging out with them for the 3 or 4 or 5 days?
For sure. I mean, the chance to be there, both in Jersey and Malta, it's just amazing. It's the first time I was close. I was near the biggest stars, and I got the chance to race against the best in the world. And in Malta, I was not far away from them. So just the confidence that it gives you to be close to them, to see what they do, and then to race against them, it's so hard to, it's nothing you can tell anyone about. It's just something that you get from those kinds of situations. And I would say Super League, I was watching it long before I got invited to be there, because as you said, I mean, Super League is just such a big show. It makes it so interesting for, I mean, anyone, even people who are not specifically interested in triathlon. If you just show it to them, it's so aggressive. You got the younger guys that for the first time are getting the chance to beat the best guys in the world. So you have the best guys in the world trying to take a stand and say, no, we are still the best. And then you have the very hungry younger guys having the first chance and doing everything to try and take over the best in the world, the best in the world. So it's so aggressive and has its short distances, a very short circuit. It makes it so, so interesting to watch. And well, at the same time, it's interesting to watch. And when something is interesting to watch, it brings more people to the race. And when you feel it, when you're racing, you feel that. You feel that this is something important. And this is something big. If I am here racing with these guys, then I can be in the world championships racing against them as well.
Yeah. And I really love the way that the Super League team made the, like as a corporate sport, as a you know, there was some big bank who sponsored it, wasn't there? And they had a VIP tent and it was right in the middle by the finish line. And they had access to all the athletes. And it was very different to a World Cup or a normal race where the athletes are kind of hidden away in tents. And, or the Olympics, you know, the similar sort of thing. The athletes are kind of kept to one side. I think from a spectator's point of view and a fan's point of view, there were so many kids who could reach over and get an autograph or a selfie with the athletes. It really did a lot to raise, you know, just as Macca and Michael wanted, it's put a different platform out there for triathletes. It's not better than, but it's different than, and it's better in some very important ways, I think. And that's, you know, it'd be great to have that back in real life later on in this year and get to go and see those races again.
I mean, I'd say, of course, it's hard to say what's better and what's not. I mean, I'd say, of course, Olympic Games and the World Cups and the World Championship, those are very big races. But in the end, I mean, triathlon, if it's a sport, but it's a show. I mean, that we are selling a show, and that's our job. In the end, we're just artists doing what we can do best and selling that show to people. And Super League does that much better than anyone else is doing at the moment. So, as you said, I mean, we're not hiding the athletes away from people. Now the people are coming to the athletes and the athletes coming to people, and we have so much interaction. And of course, it's maybe not optimal in the key moments of getting in shape or being rested to the race, but it gives you mentally, you feel like somehow accomplished when you see the kids coming to you. This kid saying that how much you inspire them, you get so much energy back from them, because you know that you're doing something that's actually helping society in some way. If it's kids or if it's even older people, I mean, anyone seeing that we are helping people, seeing that we are motivating people, making people happy, I mean, that just gives you so much energy. That's so good to hear and to see.
You know, and that actually has come full circle. That's exactly what Vanessa Fernandez did for you back in the day. And now Super League's allowing you to do the same for the next generation of kids. That's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's the main thing about sports. I mean, it's making society and making life for other people better. And there's no better way than making the athletes come closer to the people. And because there's no better way to motivate and to make people more excited about it.
All right, I want to take you to Hamburg now. Hamburg in the summer of 2020. You're in a breakaway on the bike. I think there were six or seven of you in a break on the bike, and you knew it was on. Clearly, you got yourself into the position. You were first off the bike. You were first through transition. And the thing that was really interesting this morning before the interview, watching all these videos back to back, is how confident you looked leading out of transition. And how comfortable you looked running with Vincent Lewis and was it Leo Berger was the French guy you were running with?
Yeah, that's correct.
You looked really comfortable and confident in their company. And I'm wondering how much of an effect being at Super League had, being around Vincent, being around Leo, being around, you know, the very top guys, because you've described as being like I was battling for 25th, 30th place on the world scene before, and all of a sudden, I mean, you didn't look back, you didn't hesitate, you instantly broke straight out of transition. Nobody could get near you on the run.
I would say it started in Malta with the eighth or ninth place.
Yeah.
Ninth place I got there, got me the confidence that I was close to them. And then we had COVID just starting a few months after it. And I was just in lockdown. I was training almost alone, just together with my sister, actually, for many months. And swimming is my weakest of the three, or was my weakest. And I just decided that even though I was not swimming, I was going to work a lot of my strength to be able, when I was back swimming, I was going to catch up on what I had lost. So I saw that in Malta, my biggest weakness was swimming. And if I wanted to be there in the front, I had to work on that. So, well, I had 3 months where I got to work a lot on my biking and my running, making me very comfortable with the paces that that I saw people running at. Then I had 2 more months where I got back in the pool and, well, had time to make really, really big sessions and put in many, many Ks. And then it was time for Super League, which was my first race, the Arena Games, the first Arena Games, and my first race of 2020.
Ah, I'd forgotten it came in that order. Yes, so let's talk about that a little bit then, and we'll come back to it again in a minute, because obviously we've got the Arena Games coming up in a very short time as we speak. So tell us about the Arena Games at Rotterdam then, because you you had a great race there, didn't you?
Yeah, so I'll say that was the big moment where that gave me confidence for the World Championships. Well, as I said, you're racing against the best in the world, and it's at the same time it gives you confidence that you're beside them. But then you have the a mental obstacle that you have to overcome, which is getting ahead of these guys. You have so much respect for them. How can you get ahead of them? Because you feel that they are better than you, so you cannot go ahead. You cannot go first, and you cannot be in front of them. And that's a hard obstacle to overcome. But in the Arena Games, you're not really besides them. You're not getting ahead of them. It's mostly just on Zwift. So it's just the characters that are getting ahead of each other.
Okay.
And in some way, it made it easier to actually show myself that I could be better than, well, not all of them, but most of them. So that was a big breakthrough in the Arena Games, was that it showed me that even though I have so much respect for them, I can still beat them.
Yeah. Because, let's talk about names. You beat Johnny Brownlee. You beat Richard Murray. You beat Javier Gomez.
Yeah.
So, as names go, that's pretty much everyone. That's a who's who of triathlon over the past 5 years. There's hardly anyone left that you haven't beaten on the world stage at this point, is there?
Well, it's just Vincent.
Just Vincent.
So I'd say the Arena Games was just perfect to give me that little extra confidence, the extra spark to have the strength to go ahead of the best guys in the world.
Yeah.
So after the result there, and I actually remember, I did not believe that I was going to be in the podium there because the results only come like 1 or 2 minutes after the three races, because you have the points and everything. And while you're racing, you're not really counting it. And I had no idea that I had done so well. So I was just, doing my best. And I knew on the last race, I was sprinting just alone. I got away with Gomez on the bike, and I was sprinting against him. And first, it took like 1 minute to know if I won the sprint. I was like, "Oh, I won against Gomez! That's just crazy! That's just out of this world!" And then 2 minutes later, "Oh, I was actually second in the whole race, just ahead of Johnny and Gomez and Murray." And I was like, "Wow, okay, this is amazing!" And the confidence it gave me was just, it was key for the World Championships. I think I had like three or four weeks until the World Championships. And when I got there, I, as a young guy, I was just like, if it goes badly, then I had nothing to prove directly either. But if it can go very well. And so I could only win there. There was nothing that could happen that was bad for me.
Yeah.
So I just thought, let's give it all from the beginning and let's see where it takes me. Of course, with the confidence I had from the Arena Games, I just sprinted on the water, which was my weakest of the three. I just sprinted as hard as I could. And I saw myself in the first pack on a WTS. It was my second WTS ever, but I was in the first pack, which was crazy for me. Then, I was just in the end of the first pack. Then I got out of the water. And the first guys were pushing on the bike so hard, really, really hard to Alistair, Johnny, Vincent, Lecor, Schomburg, the guys were in the front just pushing so hard to try and get away and try to break away from the big pack that was coming behind. And as I was in the end of the first pack, I was just, I got in the middle. I was alone in between the first pack and the second pack. And I remembered, I was like, This is my chance. I mean, I've never been close to the first pack like this, and I swam so hard that if I don't take the chance to catch up with them, it was not worth it, and I had to make it worth it. So I remember I was biking so hard for two laps. I think I was alone. I was biking so hard I was puking on myself.
Really?
Yeah, I had I had like two or three moments where I was started puking, like throwing up myself until I finally catch up with them.
Tell you what, that's an incredible ride on your own to catch a bike pack with the firepower, with the two Brownleys, Vincent Lewis, all the rest of the guys that were in there. That must really give you confidence in your biking that you can. I mean, I know there were some twists and turns in there that are going to play into your hands a little bit, but really, man, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, there was. I really didn't know if I was going to be able to catch them, but I just gave everything. And of course, the whole 2020 season was for me just like it's just mental boost after mental boost, just seeing what I'm able to do. And well, when I got there, I actually, my first thought is that, okay, I made it. So what my effort on the swimming was worth it. I made it on the bike, but now I'm not going to be able to, I mean, my legs were so dead then. My whole body was so dead. I couldn't feel the body. It was like, I felt like I had just done the final sprint finish on the run. That was my feeling. I just want to throw myself down. And I was just hanging in the back. And while waiting for the run, I was like, okay, this is a very big accomplishment anyways. And then it took, I don't remember, the bike was maybe 6 laps or something. It took me 2 laps. And I was like, after 2 laps, I was like, oh, wait, I got my energy back. And I just, the whole body just recovered so fastly. And in the last lap, I even got ahead of them. I was like, okay, I got energy back and I have nothing to lose. Let's go to the front. And I just started pushing. I actually got a little bit of a gap in the end of the bike. And then again, getting a gap on the end of the bike just got me even a little bit more of a mental strength. Okay, I'm able to get away from them on the bike. So now let's see if I'm able to run away from them on the run. So it's kind of like, it feels all, everything feels kind of has a fantasy because it's the things I've dreamed about before, but I just got into this. So let's see what I can do. Let's see how much the body can take. So then I started running and I got away with Leo. And I was just in the front pushing as hard as I could until, well, Vincent was the only one who could catch up with us. And then the race just became, let's see how long I can hang on to Vincent then. And it was just very five very hard Ks, just trying to hang on to him, but always confident that, well, I can make it. I can be here. The guys look as hard as I am, so I can make it. And then, well, until, what was it, maybe 800 meters to the finish, Vincent started to, run a little bit faster, started to his sprint finish, even though he had more to give. And well, that's when my body started to say, okay, this is your limit. This is your limit. You cannot do more than this. And I actually dropped a little bit. The body had given everything and I dropped a little bit and I saw Leo running away with Vincent for a few seconds. I was like, okay, let's see. Now the fight is to hang on to third place. But just a few hundred meters later, I just see how Leo loses Vincent. And now I am catching up with Leo. So then I go again, oh, there's a chance here. Maybe I can do a little bit more. So that's when I go into the, into the flow where I go all out. So that's the total, like 100% of everything I can give. And I just, when I lose the feeling of my whole body, I see my arms going, I see my legs going, but I kind of feel I have no control and I go past Leo and just, run all the way to the finish line. And what an incredible moment for sure.
That's a great story. You're a great storyteller as well. This is, I love the enthusiasm you've got. It's a real sort of boy's own dream of, I dreamt about being one of the best in the world. And here I am running at the World Championships final for the gold medal against two other guys.
Most amazing thing. That's the feeling while I was running. And that's an amazing feeling to believe in your, or almost living your own dreams. It just, yeah. You get, it just, well, in some way it helps with the, well, with the pain that you're having, the physical pain, because mentally you're just so happy, because you know that no matter what I do, this is going to make me so happy. And I'm living my own dream. So, I mean, well, it's incredible moments then.
So let's look forward to Tokyo then. If everything goes to plan, we've got the Olympics coming up this summer, obviously delayed from last summer. What are your thoughts, beliefs, hopes around the race in Tokyo?
Okay, so of course I got a lot of confidence from last year. So from now on, it's the situation has changed. So before, no matter what I did, it was good for me. So if I got a 20th place on the WTS, it was good. If I got a 10th place, it was good. I got a podium, blew my mind, blew everyone else's minds. But now I've done it in the arena games. I've done it in the World Championships. I've done it in the World Cup in Karlovy Vary. So now if I'm outside of the podium, now it's not as good. So start getting into what the best guys in the world go through every race, which is now my place is to be on the podium, and the fight gets much harder, much more pressure, not from outside, but I would say from myself, because now I do not accept to do worse. So of course, what does this mean? This means that if I go to the Olympics, I want to be there for a medal. There's no meaning in keeping that a secret, because that's what my mentality is. Even if I don't do it, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But well, it's not sure that I'm going to be at the Olympics yet. It's still a conversation with the federation. It's their choice to who goes. But of course, if I get the chance to go there, if I get the chance to race in the biggest race there is in triathlon, I'm going to be there for the podium.
And who do you see running shoulder to shoulder with you down the home straight for the gold medal? When you think about the race, who are the two or three big players who you see the race playing out against?
So it's quite interesting, because you have so many young guys coming up. So you have, as in the arena games now, so you have Ben Dykstra, you have Alex Yee, you have Hayden Wild, you have Matthew Hauser. So very young guys who are such strong guys across all three segments. So I kind of believe that at least one of them will be there in the front. Then you have the best in the world, which are, well, let's say Johnny, let's say, I don't know if Alistair's going to be there. I haven't looked it up. But I think
he's not qualified yet. They've not selected him.
Okay.
It's one of those where, I mean, it's a brave selector that leaves a fit Ali Brownlee out of their Olympic team, isn't it?
It is. Well, I would say if I am there, I'd love to have him there. It makes the race so much better and so much faster. He's such an aggressive guy.
Yeah.
Out there on the course. But then the only guy I haven't been able to beat is Vincent. So I definitely see myself in the front there, behind Vincent's owl. So he got his big owl tattoo on the back that I've looked upon for a few Ks on the run on my latest races. So looking forward to be able to be side by side with him and being able to, even on the sprint finish, getting ahead. I would say the young guns, Vincent, Alistair, Johnny, we got Gomez, you got Mola. I would say everyone. I've actually, when I'm doing my hard sessions, mostly on the trainer, I have this ability. I don't know if it happens to more people, but I can, when it's getting really hard, I kind of start fantasizing on my biggest goal. When I was younger, it could be the junior European championships. It has been the last year, it could be the world championship, but now it's the Olympic Games. So, I fantasize about it just when I was biking here, pushing my 350 watts, my 400 watts, going all out and just fantasizing about the sprint finish on the Olympic Games, having Vincent by my side and just running alongside him, shoulder against shoulder, see who who goes in first. And well, I've seen Alex there, I've seen Matthew there. Most of the guys have been there. Also, I do many hard sessions. I have many possibilities to have these fantasies about the Olympic Games. But I would say, for sure, Vincent is the biggest goal. He's the biggest guy now. I mean, it's almost impossible to take him. So if you win against Vincent, you win against everyone else. Almost for sure.
Yeah. And so last thing then, we've got the Super League Arena Games in London coming up as we interview. It's a couple of weeks away, but as this goes out, it'll only be a couple of days away. Are you excited to race the Arena Games again?
For sure. I mean, last year, the Arena Games were such a good way to start the season, even though we started so late. So I think there's no better way to start the season again. So really looking forward to it. It's a great way to see how the shape is, how the training has been. And then again, well, racing against some of the best in the world and then some of the best younger guys as well. So it's the guys that are in the same position as me. The young guns trying to prove themselves. You never know what's going to happen because it's just surprise after surprise when you're younger, because we don't really have the consistency yet on the big races. So I'm really, really looking forward to racing against Alex and Ben, and to see what they've been up to and to see how we can represent the youth guys in the big races.
The youth gone wild, as the 80s rocker Skid Row would say. All right, man. Well, listen, thank you. Exactly. Thank you so much for your time. It's been brilliant to have you on. We got a little bit cut off there at the end, unfortunately, but that's podcasting. We had, I think Vasco got a call came through, but what a great lad and what an amazing story. And I just love that spirit of 15 years old. I've got a dream. I'm going to move away from my parents. I'm going to go and live on my own. And the first when I heard the story, I thought it was going to be a case of, you know, I went to a residential school, I went to a boarding school, but no, he was properly living in his own apartment at that age, learning how to cook and clean and look after himself. So I think he's a cracking, cracking lad. Really nice to talk to him. And who knows, we might have got the interview there with the future Olympic champion. So watch this space and tune into Super League Tri London. Thanks very much from Adam at Super League Tri for helping sort out the interview. It's great to get somebody on who can talk about the race and who is of that standard, which is just great. Right, so guys, I just want to say thanks very much. I've had a whole bunch of emails through over the last week again saying how much people are enjoying the show, being back on regularly again and asking how I'm doing. I'm really pleased to announce that I feel as though, sort of health-wise, I've turned the corner. Like, touch wood, I've managed to go out for a jog or a bike ride pretty much every day over the last 10 days now. Heart rate is pretty much returning to normal. I'm having no more sort of COVID after effects at this point. But to put that into context, we're now, the 23rd of March. So it's been very close to 3 months for me from the day I got diagnosed on the 2nd of January. So if you're going through it, if you've been ill and you're not right yet, know that although it can feel like a very, very long process, people do get better. It's not the flu. You know, people who say this on Twitter, I want to reach into the internet and slap them about a little bit, I'll be honest. It is not the flu. It's not something you're going to probably get over in a week or 10 days. Or at the very least, don't be surprised if it's not the kind of thing that you don't get over in a week or 10 days. You have to be extremely patient. The long-term implications for this, you know, they can be 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, who knows? I've heard stories of people struggling with this for an entire year, but know that there are people out there who are getting better. And I've got to tell you, it feels so good to manage it out there. Just put the running shoes on and be able to go for a jog again. And honestly, I don't care about how fast I'm running. I've only got my heart rate monitor and my GPS on just so I can make sure I'm not going too fast. But just to be out running through the woods is the absolute dream from all of this. So yeah, that's my little gushing bit. Thanks for the emails. I really appreciate it. And if you're getting yourself into shape for this coming season, well, it looks like there's great stuff on the horizon. We've seen that the Outlaw Half is back on sale. You might just still get a slot for that, actually. They had a whole bunch of slots reopen up. The new race date for Outlaw Half Nottingham is the 20th of June. So you might get lucky if you're considering what you want to do. And maybe you had a foreign race that looks like it's not going to go ahead because of travel, because you know, it's looking very dodgy for international travel all the way through the summer at the moment as I'm recording this. But there's a good chance of these events going ahead in the UK, the way things are looking. So who knows? If you fancy that, get on it over at the Outlaw. There's going to be a whole bunch of us from Team Oxygen Addict down there. I think we've got about 50 people racing, so you'll be able to come over and say hello. And yeah, I hope your training's going well. I hope you're managing to hold a routine together. I hope you're starting to feel fit and, you know, nights are getting lighter. Clocks are about to change. Hopefully you're getting to the point where you're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel and we're going to be able to get outside and enjoy our summertime with the fitness we've built over the winter. I want to read you this from one of our athletes from this week. He said, this is from a guy called Adam C. After a lot of pacing about and feeling grumpy this morning, I finally gave in and went for a run this afternoon and I ran a 10K PB by 3 minutes and 57 seconds. I've improved more in the last 3 months of coaching and team involvement than I had in the previous 3 years of just winging it. Everyone at Team Oxygen Addict, I love you all. I just love that. I love it when someone's joined, they've worked hard for a period of months and they get to see the rewards. And I'm seeing tons of this in our Facebook group at the moment. This week has been testing week. There's loads of people posting all-time FTP highs, loads of people knocking 2, 3, 4 minutes off the 10K time. And they're in a really good position now to start adding the long, steady endurance sessions for 70.3 and iron distance racing and really build on that engine, having had a really fun, punchy winter. Now to be able to go outdoors and enjoy that outdoor steady riding and build that endurance on top of the power and strength base that they've all got. So well done to all of you who've grafted away through the winter. You really deserve all the gains that you're getting. If any of you are out there want to think about some coaching, there's a link in the show notes. You can book a call with me and have a chat. We can find out whether you think our coaching system will work for you. I think we've pretty much got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers in the world, I think, pretty much. We've officially partnered with the Performance Chef, so our athletes get ready-made meal plans, with Matt Bottrell bike fitting for position and our Dynamics advice. And go back and listen to last week's show for his time trialing special if you want to hear more from Matt. We partnered with Precision Hydration, offering personalized hydration calls, HRV for training. So training plans are guided by HRV and how ready your body is to train, especially to train hard on any given day. And we partnered with Yoga 15. So our strength and conditioning and flexibility program is, I think, the best out there in the world as well. So if you want to find out more, book a call through a link in the show notes. And if you want to train with us, Tuesdays at 7:15 PM UK time on Zwift, just look in the official Zwift events, the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast Power Hour. We've got the same workouts in there that my athletes will be doing. At the moment, we're working on sweet spot sessions. So come along and have a ride with us. All the group stays together on the screen. You just ride at your own personal power and pace. Once you've dialed that in on Zwift, it'll have you, you know, give you instructions on the screen for what you need to do. All right, well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Here are some discount codes and deals for you. You can use the code OXYGENADDICT15 for 15% off your first electrolyte order over at precisionhydration.com. Team Oxygen Addict members, remember, we've got a personal discount code for you in the team area in our discount section. So don't forget, you get a much bigger discount than that. Check that out in our section there. Okay, and remember, there's links in the show notes for all the sponsors, so you don't have to remember them. Until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.